This is Eric Sinrod with Duane Morris in the San Francisco office. Jonathan and I are now bringing you our weekly Tech Law 10. We're not physically in the same room at this moment. In fact, Jonathan, I understand that you're traveling around an airport today, and it's having you think globally. Why don't you share with us some of your global thoughts as you world travel?
Yes, happy to. And greetings, everybody, from Amsterdam Airport, or Goedenavond, if you're listening from the Netherlands. Yes, so sorry for the background noise. Obviously, the sound quality just isn't quite as good as when we were in the room together last week, Eric. But I've been on a small tour of the Netherlands visiting clients here, and it struck me that one thing that absolutely has stood out on this trip has been the rise in the implementation of global HR systems. And I'm talking about systems like Workday, PeopleSoft, SAP, and equally in the sales arena, I'm talking about applications like Salesforce that enable global organizations to globalize the information that they hold on people they sell to, on people they sell through, and of course their own employees and consultants and workers. And it seemed to me that we're seeing particular issues here. I've done maybe 20, 25, 30 of these projects over the past few years. And the issues that you face are almost always the same. Now, as you probably know, Eric, there's a real conflict sometimes between what U.S. corporations want to learn about their subsidiaries in Europe and what European privacy law allows them to learn about those subsidiaries. And it seems to me that in very few places are those conflicts felt quite so much as with the globalization of HR systems. And it seems to me that there's some very simple ways of avoiding complexity. In Europe, you get issues not only with the data privacy regulators. You've got to prove that the information that you hold on people is proportionate. You've also potentially got problems with the transfer of that data from Europe to the US. But in addition, you could get pushback from works councils or employees or their trade unions who generally are reluctant to have some bits of the HR record, particularly relating to diversity and to discipline held by HQ in the US. You face the same objections with productivity-related data and performance appraisals, in my experience as well. And it seemed to me that sometimes the solutions are quite simple and stunningly obvious from the projects that I've been involved with. For example, some of those software applications I mentioned have the ability to hold something like 130 or 140 fields of data per individual. And many US corporations start from the point that because the software, because the computer says we can hold 130 or 140 fields of data, lets. So they end up asking their employees strange questions like, what's your mother's maiden name? That might be justifiable. And what blood group was your mother? And to European employees, those questions look very bizarre. Sometimes they could be justified in a safety situation, for example, if they're involved in a chemical plant where they're handling hazardous chemicals and blood group might be indicative of the type of issues that they could possibly face. And of course, in that situation, it's probably okay to ask an employee his or her blood group for obviously for an emergency transfusion or whatever, should there be a disaster at the plant. But it seems to me that the very straightforward step in a lot of these projects is to actually ask for each field of data, do I need to know that information about my employees? And it seemed to me, Eric, that tied in with a couple of themes that we've talked about recently, one with social media and people giving away too much information online, and also with e-discovery. And it struck me that in some respects, not only are the European privacy issues and issues with works councils, but from an e-discovery point of view, I've seen a couple of cases recently where there's allegations that the US entity has discriminated against certain sections of the population. And I just wonder if putting all of the global employment details in one pot makes that much more attractive for plaintiff lawyers, and whether that's not another issue that people ought to think through carefully when they're installing these global systems. I wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, I think you're making a good point, Jonathan. So are you proposing there should be, you know, different buckets to hold, you know, different groupings of data in this arena?
Yeah, I am. So some of the regulators, for example, I've seen the Austrian regulator say, look, performance data stays in Austria. You can have a global HR system that holds performance data on all employees enterprise-wide, but only Austrians can see the data on Austrian individuals. Thank you very much. It seems to me maybe from a discovery point of view, that it's wise to limit those buckets. I've also seen that be a real benefit when there's been a security breach, because of course we're seeing a lot of compromises of these global HR systems, sometimes through vendors like pension providers leaking the details into the wild, sometimes through careless employees, occasionally through the databases being hacked. And it just seems to me, as you say, that putting the data into separate buckets, and maybe we have, you know, one bucket emptier or bucket inspector that can walk around and look in the various buckets, a very high-level employee who can coordinate stuff if need be. But it just seems to me that we should start from the assumption that we'll only handle the data in the way we need it. But the difficulty, I think, is a lot of people warehouse a lot of data,
That's
don't
right.
ever look at it, and create compliance issues and presumably e-discovery issues over there as well.
Yeah, not only discovery issues. Obviously, it can be tempting to, you know, warehouse information en masse, if you will. But I get nervous when there's a gross aggregation of information, especially when all of, you know, the different subsets that's put together should be accorded different levels of protection. You know, for example, information that's been retrieved or harvested within the United States, for example, might have less privacy protection attached to it than information that's originally harvested in Europe, because there are greater safeguards there put in place, or where there are different levels of promises made to the people that are providing their information along the way in terms of what protections will be there. So I think you're raising a good point, Jonathan. I'm glad you brought it to our attention. Are there any final thoughts you want to add as you're about to board your plane?
Yeah, just my call for proportionality, I think. I don't think it's very difficult. I think for most businesses, they should just list the fields of data that they intend to capture. Maybe they do that down the left-hand side of the page. Maybe the middle page says why we need the data. And maybe the third column, simple column, says what are the compliance implications of holding that data. From my experience, I've had projects where we've gone from a must-have list of 120 fields of data to, yeah, we can make do with 25 when people have looked at the cost of compliance. And importantly, of course, the delays of putting these systems in place. Some of the regulators will require an 18-month approval cycle if you don't do that process before you scope out the system. So, yeah, proportionality would be my watchword as I board my flight into the Dutch night sky.
Of course, my favorite word that you used, or your favorite expression was, you know, my favorite expression that you used was data in the wild. So proportionality with respect to the data that might go out in the wild. In any event, we've just hit the 10-minute limit. Jonathan needs to board a plane. We thank you for joining us for this particular installment of Tech Law 10. As you know, you can follow us in various ways. My email address is ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. Jonathan will give his in a moment. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. So, Jonathan, why don't you give us the final sayonara here?
I will do. And my email address is jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. We're always happy to hear from you. And that announcement is no doubt telling me to get a move on. So for those of you who've listened to us in the Netherlands, dank je wel. And once again, goedenavond to you. Good night, everyone.
Have a safe flight. Thank you.